Northwestern University, in cooperation with the Mutual Broadcasting System, presents The Reviewing Stand.
In 11 weeks, Northwestern University moves into its centennial year, 100 years of service to the nation and the great Northwest. The Reviewing Stand will present many programs of unusual interest. We invite you to listen.
Today, The Reviewing Stand asks, who should be drafted? Our unrehearsed give-and-take discussion will center around the factors to be considered in selecting and deferring men for military service. Now, our moderator, James H. McBurney, Dean of the School of Speech, Northwestern University, will introduce participants in today's discussion. Mr. McBurney.
Our first speaker, by transcription, is General Lewis B. Hershey, Director of Selective Service. General Hershey.
Who should be drafted is a question that faces the United States at the present time. There are many reasons why the youngest men that can be used should be in this number. The law at the present time furnishes some 8 million men who are liable for service, and it is in this group particularly that we must look as we are trying to answer the question, who should be drafted? As in all other things in life, it is a question of selection, a question of choice, a question of competition between many varied interests and many groups to decide which ones may best bear the service that the country demands, at the same time giving consideration to other needs of the country, which requires that men be trained for other purposes, and the training in many ways interfering, perhaps, with their service in the armed forces. It is a rather strange thing that the educational world comes into competition not only with industry and agriculture, but with the American family. It hardly seems possible on first glance at the problem to see how the father comes in competition with a college student. But such is the case. Out of the 8 million men who are liable at the present time for service between 19 and 25 are some million men who have dependents of one sort or of another, in addition to the dependents who are found among the veterans of to the number of 2 or 3 million. So in trying to decide who we shall draft, we are faced with the proposition of whether we shall lower the age to include the 18-year-olds, whether we are going to compel some 3 million veterans to serve again, whether we are going to take one or more of the thousands of individuals who have dependents, or whether we are going to remove larger and larger numbers from among those who are single, but who do have before them the necessity of being trained in our colleges and in our schools. This problem is one that America must, in the next few months, decide. Probably the answer is in some sort of compromise. There are many people who object to reducing the age to 18 because they feel that boys of younger ages are perhaps less mature. On the other hand, the average age of graduation from high school at the present time is about 17 years and 6 months. And there is certainly an uncertain period in a boy's life if he graduates from high school and knows that he probably is going to have to serve at 19, and yet there's a year or year and a half that he cannot use too effectively. This sort of thinking would indicate that we should take them at 18. Whether or not America will decide to do it, I do not know. There are those, of course, who believe that it is better to take men with dependents or to take veterans who've already served rather than interfere with the education of our young men. I am not sure that America is ready, on the whole, to excuse from service great numbers of men to go to college if, in excusing them, they have to go to the ranks of the veterans or to the ranks of the men with dependents. But this is the problem that we have to face. And probably the solution is always is going to be found in some sort of compromise where we will have the intelligence and the means by which a few that we need in either in some fields or in the general field of the capacity, that we shall pick those to go on and continue an education which will make them more valuable to society. And then once they have completed that education, that they will give to society the benefit of their services. It would seem that somewhere in this field lies the answer to the very difficult question, who should be drafted?
Thank you, General Hershey. Continuing this Northwestern University Reviewing Stand discussion are Charles C. Rawls, National Commander of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, Charles H. Percy, President of Bell and Howell Company, and Kenneth E. Olson, Dean of the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. Now to begin, gentlemen, what are your reactions to General Hershey's position? May we hear from you, Percy?
Well, McBurney, my first reaction is an opinion I think is shared by the country as a whole, that our Selective Service program could not possibly be administered by a more capable person than General Hershey. But my second reaction is that Selective Service, being under the military in many respects, is in the difficult position of being both the judge and the jury. It has a military quota only to fill, and it has first call on all manpower. I think we all know now that an army alone does not win a war, or as we hope it's going to be the case, wage the peace. It takes farmers and scientists, geologists, doctors, ministers, educators, industrialists, and all. It takes a very strong civilian economy, really the combined efforts of all of our people. I think that a civilian, not just a military, manpower commission should weigh the relative needs of all and determine those categories of personnel that can best be utilized in the military services and those personnel that can better be utilized in services other than the military.
Do you agree with that, Olson?
In great measure. I think there's no question that we're faced with a world situation that demands that we as a nation make ourselves strong. All Americans will agree on that. The only kind of language the communist world understands is strength. But if we are to make ourselves strong, why, that means not only military, it means keeping ourselves strong in industry so that we can back up this defense force. It means a nation strong enough to pay the taxes that have to carry on this war. It means a nation strong in men of many specialized skills that are to be needed in this program. And I think we need to ask ourselves what is best for the total defense of the whole country.
Well, I suggest we, as the first question, we consider one of the matters that General Hershey discussed. What age limits should be set in calling men into service? How do you answer that, Rawls?
Well, recently we had our national convention, that is a convention of the VFW in the city of Chicago, and we passed a resolution asking for the immediate expansion of the Selective Service system to cover all physically qualified males between the ages of 18 to 35 who have had no previous military service.
That would change it from 19 to 25 to 18 to 35, right?
That is right.
I'd take issue with that. I'm willing enough to go along on the 18-year-olds. I think we may have to come to that. But I doubt whether we're going to get much out of the 35-year-olds. We found in the last war, we tried to raise the age of drafting to 45, and toward the end, had to go back to 25.
I would certainly agree with you, Professor, that if at all possible, we should meet the needs for selective service and military service out of the 19 to 26-year-old groups. And I'd like to make the further point that even in this age group, certain exceptions must be made to meet the needs of industry, of education, and these other services that I've mentioned other than the military.
Of course, we look at it this way. Russia has between 175 to 200 combat divisions. We can't meet them with a small force. In fact, we're going to invite attack unless we have a military body large enough to let Russia know that we do mean business. Now, as we discussed, it takes three men behind the lines for everyone on the line. Many men over the age of 26 into the 35-year age bracket can do a very adequate and necessary job in the military and relieve a younger man for on-the-line duty, hence the resolution which we passed.
I was struck by that figure of General Hershey's that there were 8 million men in this age group from 19 to 26. He mentioned that 1 million of those had dependents and might be considered for exemption. Another 3 million were veterans, and I certainly don't think we ought to take those right away. But I'm wondering about the other 4 million. We started off the Korean War, we had 1.5 million men. That would mean we need 1.5 million more. Why shouldn't we get them out of this 4 million? Here, we're having such a high rate of rejections. In July, rejections ran 60%. I think you said they're now running about 42.5%. Why can't some of these men who are now being rejected be drafted to do these limited service jobs?
Well, I agree with you thoroughly on that. I think a lot of men are being rejected for physical reasons that could do an adequate job. It might be that there's not enough universal thought in our various selective service boards. I know that one board will reject a man for one reason and another board will take him in. I believe that those boards should be all given one standard set of rules and the physical requirements be lowered somewhat.
Well, if you have 8 million men available between 19 and 25, why do you want to lower the limit to 18 and take these youngsters?
I think it's a better time for the boy. It's a natural break in his life. He's just getting started on a job or he's just through high school. It would interfere less seriously with industry. This boy, if he could get his military training out of the way at that age, would come back at 19.5 or 20, and he could still then have good years ahead to go to school or get started in a job.
I'd agree 100% with that, with the one proviso that boys would be given adequate training before they went overseas. I think that in the Korean War, we have seen boys go over there with as little as 5 and 6 week service. Certainly, a boy, if he's drafted at the age of 18, should be given at least 1 year of basic training in this country. But I'd also agree with the fact that it would be, there is a good case for lowering the age to 18. Industry hesitates to take men into good jobs when they feel that they're going to be drafted. Boys don't make good students when they feel they're going to be interrupted in the middle of their first year of college or shortly thereafter.
Well, it seems we're all in agreement on the 18-year-old question, but I'd like to interject this one thing. I think any man that goes into our armed forces should have at least 1 year of military training regardless of his age.
Whether he's 18, 19, or 20.
Or 100.
You men have no apprehension about the emotional immaturity of these lads at 18, I take it. Are they ready for military service? Apparently, the services don't want them.
They grow up fast. We took them at 18, the last four, and they made good soldiers.
Well, many of our men, or boys, you might say, falsified their age in the last war and proved to be very fine soldiers. And look at our football fields, our quarterbacks, 17, 18, before crowds of 70,000, they're doing a capable job. I have no fear that the American boy of 18 couldn't, wherever he's put.
You men feel that that we ought to give special consideration, I know you do, Rawls, to the men who have had previous military service. I'm talking about the reservists and the National Guardsmen.
Well, the point that we have there, we realize that a reservist or a National Guardsman is a volunteer. And if he's called, he must respect that. However, men have been taken into the reserve in active duty with little or no notice whatsoever, and they may have 3 or 4 dependents. And many of them have been in tremendously serious financial positions as a result. We think that should be In all fairness, be straightened out so that their deferments and selective service be handled on the same basis. Yeah.
Olson, do you have word?
Well, I certainly agree with that. I think there have been many injustices in the way these reserves have been called. I think there's something over 200,000 who've been pulled in now. Just as one example, we had a boy pulled out Friday. He'd been been a major in paratroops during this last war, was shot down in Nijmegen in Holland, has been back in school on a 50% disability, and yet now he is called. And he can't jump with paratroops. He'll have to hold a desk job. Why couldn't one of these men who'd been deferred take in his place?
Also, there seems to be a great deal of non-uniformity of policy between the services themselves, men in the Air Force being called maybe faster than those in the Navy. I'd propose that we should have a uniform policy within the services, and then a uniform policy that doesn't discriminate against veterans and that takes men in selective service later than they take actually veterans who put in their service.
I'd like to throw in a little idea I have that we ought to have a point system now, just as we had as the men were discharged. That a man would be given so many points for each month he'd been in service in the last war, so many additional points for the months overseas or for the months in combat. That way, the man who had once served his country and served given maybe 3, 4, 5 years would be the last one called.
Well, of course, we're now speaking of a state when we are not actually at war. I disagree with you in this way. I do not think the military or the man with military experience should be called at the present time. In case of war, as far as my organization is concerned, we are ready. But these men have been disrupted in their lives regardless of the amount of service during World War II. Now they come back, many of them established businesses, families are growing. If you take them in now before we're actually at war, you're going to two times in their lifetime upset them. So we feel that the non-military trained man now should first be called to implement our source of trained men.
I think we've been forgetting that point in our discussion here, that when we're talking of 3 million men, that's not a static army. What we want to do is build up a big military reserve. These men would serve 2 years and then go out and their place be taken by others who would come in to get the same kind of training, so that eventually we'd have a big trained reserve.
Well, what kind of consideration should be given to the needs of industry and agriculture, Percy?
Well, I feel that no greater consideration should be given to the needs of industry and agriculture than any other of the essential non-military services, such as education and the like, the sciences. But so far as the effect now on industry, the indiscriminate drafting with short notice of men between 19 and 26 is hurting industry. For one thing, we don't have an unemployment pool that we had in 1940. In 1940, we had 8 million people unemployed, and many people who were drafted could be quickly replaced. Now I think the figure is about 2 million, many of whom are unemployable. And the problem of filling jobs quickly is a very difficult one for industry right today.
Well, aren't key men in industry and agriculture being deferred now?
Between the ages
of 19 and 25. What has been your experience?
Our experience has been that draft boards are paying little or no attention to the job that a particular man has. They take the position that if a man is 26 or under, that he couldn't be contributing as much to a company or whatever he may be engaging in as he could to military service. I don't think this is true. In our own case, we have many engineers, cooperative engineers, that we have put through school for 5 years who have been working for us 3 or 4 years. With their school training, that means 8 or 9 years of practical training in the company, industrial engineers and the like. And we've lost 3 of those within the last 30 days, which has seriously hurt us in many respects.
How does that affect war contracts?
Well, it affects us in that we have now about $6 million in war contracts. All of the services are asking us to bid on other types of vitally needed equipment. We're finding it difficult to find enough skilled engineers to work with the services in developing their needs.
Well, we feel that we can't disagree with you too much. We know that we need industry. But we are of the opinion that deferments, for industrial reasons, the burden of proof should be on the industry and upon the individual himself. and it should be on a technical war industry that would provide something to our all-around military program. And we have another thought, which was a great source of discontent among millions of men in the service. We feel that the men drafted into the military service and placed as a private or as a seaman should not be, or should be considered from the source, from the standpoint of income. In other words, we're going to defer a lot of men and let them go on their own ordinary way, amassing a nice income, and whereas this man is getting $50 to $60 a month and maybe a few extra dollars for a family. And selective service and the American people should certainly take steps to do away with a system that discriminates the man because he has a musket over his shoulder.
I think you have a very, very good point there, and it may well get back to the original proposition that I put out, that we should have a civilian commission of some sort weigh the relative needs for manpower. And then because a man is selected for military service, he's not, others are not in a much more favorable position than he is. He can be, young men can be put into other categories where they can serve their country's need best. Maybe it's in military service, maybe it's someplace else.
But are you suggesting that there are men, physically able men between the ages of 19 and 25 that should be permanently deferred because they're in key positions in industry and agriculture?
I think they should be deferred to the extent that they can be replaced. And it's impossible to replace some of those men in the 3 and 4 week periods that we now have. Really, what I'm getting back to, McBurney, is the fact that during the war, in World War II, when we had to control materials, the military had to relinquish their right to have first call on everything. The War Production Board was set up at that time. The military services put in their needs for materials. The War Production Board considered them and saw that they got them. But they also saw that the civilian economy was not crippled by so doing. The same thing held true in atomic energy. It was taken from the military, placed under the civilian, and of course the greatest need for atomic energy now is with the military, therefore they're getting most of that attention right now. But so too with manpower, there are civilian requirements that must be given consideration.
We have another thought on men deferred by virtue of occupation. This is a fast scientific age with jet planes and atomic bombs. We are of the opinion that any man deferred by reason of his occupation should be trained in civil defense, and that would be mandatory on him so that he could adequately and intelligently assist our many cities and our people in the event we were subject to attack.
That makes good sense.
Now, General Hershey had had something to say, Olson, about deferring men for college and university. What's your position on that? Does that make any sense to you?
Well, I don't think we can dry up our nation's supply of trained men for industry or the professions if we start taking all these 18-year-olds, as we seem to be agreed on, right out of high school. There'll be a 2-year gap here when we'll have few men going to college. And if this is going to be a long-term pull, 10 years or more, can we afford a 10-year hiatus in the production of trained men? Take the single category of engineering. American industry needs 20,000 engineers a year to take care of replacements. Now, the low birth rate of the 30s is just beginning to catch up with us, and our enrollments in engineering schools are down this fall. If these men are allowed to go through and graduate, we'd produce only 17,000 engineers 4 years from now. Now, if General Hershey's plan of allowing them to start, then taking 50% at the end of the first year and 50% at the end of the next year and so on.
That is, start college and then pull them out.
And pull periodically. Them out, goes through. Why, in 4 years, we'd graduate 2,100 engineers instead of the 22,000 that are needed. No, I don't think that we ought to defer everybody who wants to study engineering, because America needs not only engineers, but men for other professions as well. Science and medicine, dentistry, law, journalism, and teaching.
How about that?
Well, it seems to me, Professor, that your remarks sort of sum up into one word, and that is strength. We need strength all the way around. We know that we have to be strong militarily. That's our only answer for security today on world fronts. But we know in order to support such strength, militarily we have to be strong economically. We have to be strong spiritually and morally. And it's getting the proper balance and utilizing our manpower to get that balance that is our biggest problem.
I know there's danger of injustice here. Poor parents who cannot afford to send their boys to college have every right to say, well, why should my boy be called when the son of a richer neighbor is deferred and sent to college? I think we must select from our total pool of 18-year-olds each year by intelligence tests those boys, regardless of their economic status, who show the best capacity for learning and intellectual leadership. And I think we must recognize that those boys are also serving their nation, but that at the end, when they have completed their training, they've been deferred, yes, but then they must go in and serve their nation.
Well, I have to agree with the professor. We'll go along on that, and an aptitude test. And we in the VFW feel that we must develop the minds and the intelligence of America as well as the military know-how. But we go along with you all the way on the fact that nobody should be discriminated against because of financial background.
Now, let me see if I understand that. Let's say that all these 18-year-olds take this intelligence test or aptitude test that you men are talking about, and a certain number of them are selected as having high potentialities for higher education. Now, are these boys to go into engineering schools, literary colleges, art schools, journalism schools, and be deferred? Or what type of school will they go into? What's your thinking on that, Olson?
Maybe wherever they may be useful. Now, we found the last war.
Well, who's to determine where they're useful? The boy?
No, I think that's where this man's manpower board is going to come in here.
Ross, what do you think about that?
I think that now that it's essential with the state of the world that these boys, if possible, can have military training. I believe they should be trained for the sciences that would give some assistance to technical war industry. Now, that's engineers and everything. At the same time, we cannot deplete all our professions. We must have some men. But we feel there should be very rigid rules set up for those men, and if they are inclined to take it as a joke and are not absolutely serious about the job they're doing in the various educational institutions, they should be immediately placed on selective service.
Well, I think that's the thought. They'd be pulled out if they didn't make good on their job.
I think we appear to be in substantial agreement on this matter of deferments in the colleges and universities. Thank you for a very interesting discussion.
Thank you, gentlemen. You've been listening to the Northwestern University Reviewing Stand discussion, Who Should Be Drafted? Our speakers today were Major General Louis B. Hershey, who spoke today by transcription, Kenneth E. Olson, Charles H. Percy, and Charles C. Rawls. You can secure a copy of today's broadcast for 10 cents in coin. Address your request to the Reviewing Stand, Northwestern University, Evanston, Illinois. A subscription to the Reviewing Stand costs only $1 for the next 4 months, $2.50 for an entire year. Write to the Reviewing Stand, Northwestern University, Evanston, Illinois. Now, our moderator, James H. McBurney, will tell you about next week's program.
Next week, the Reviewing Stand will present a debate on the question that has been selected as the National High School Debate Topic. Should the American people reject the welfare state? Our speakers will be the Honorable Paul Douglas, United States Senator from Illinois, Alfred P. Hockey, economic consultant to General Motors, Maynard Krieger, professor of economics at the University of Chicago, and H.W. Prentice, Jr., president of the Armstrong Cork Company and former president of the National Association of Manufacturers. We invite you to listen to this debate on the question, should the American people reject the welfare state?
The Northwestern University Reviewing Stand is broadcast coast to coast every week as a public service feature of Mutual.